Chapter 3. Vili goes every evening to Waldmann's. That is a resort not far from the town where there is dancing in the afternoons and evenings. I am going tonight too, for Karl Brugger has told me that Adela is there sometimes. I should like to see her again. All the windows of the garden ballroom at Waldmann's are lit up. The shadows of the dancers move lightly across the drawn curtains. I take up a position at the bar and look around for Vili. Every table is occupied. There is not a chair free. There has been a perfect frenzy for amusement these last few months since the war. My eye suddenly lights on a dazzling white belly and the majestical claw hammer of a swallow-tailed coat. Vili in his new cutaway. I stand there and blink. The coat is black, the vest white, and the hair red. A living flagpole. Vili receives my astonishment affably as admiration. "You might well stare," says he, turning himself around like a peacock. "My Kaiser William Memorial Cutaway. How do you like it? You would never have thought that could come out of an army greatcoat, now would you?" He pats me on the shoulder. "But it's grand that you've come. There's a dance tournament tonight. We're all in for it. Fine prizes. It starts in half an hour." Until then, one may still try out one's paces. Vili has a sort of female pugilist for a partner. A great hefty creature as powerful as a shire stallion. At the moment, he is practicing a one-step with her, in which speed is the most noticeable feature. Karl, on the other hand, is dancing with a girl from the food office, all tricked out with rings and chains like a sleigh horse. In this way, he combines business and pleasure most agreeably. But Albert is not at our table. A trifle shyly, he salutes us from a corner where he is sitting with a fair-haired girl. "We've seen the last of him," says Vili prophetically. I take a stroll around in the hope of picking up a good dancer. That is no simple matter. Many who at table appear light-footed as a doe turn out afterwards to dance no better than an elephant. And good dancers are much coveted, of course. However, I do at last succeed in bespeaking a little seamstress. The orchestra sounds a flourish. A chap with a chrysanthemum in his buttonhole comes to the front and explains that a couple will now give a demonstration of the latest thing from Berlin, a foxtrot. That is unknown here as yet. We have only heard tell of it. We gather around curiously. The orchestra strikes up a syncopated measure, and the pair begin to skip around each other like a couple of spring lambs. Sometimes they will retreat from each other, then they will link arms again and twirl, limping, in a circle. Vili is craning his neck, his eyes as big as saucers. Here at last is a dance after his own heart. The table with the prizes is brought in. We barge across. There are three prizes, each for the one-step, the Boston, and the foxtrot. The foxtrot rules us out. We cannot do that. But like old Blücher, we mean to carry off the other two. The first prize in each case is 10 gulls' eggs or a bottle of schnapps. Vili inquires suspiciously whether gulls' eggs are edible. Reassured, he comes back. The second prize is 6 gulls' eggs or an all-wool balaclava cap. The third, 4 eggs or 2 packets of Germany's Heroic Fame cigarettes. "We're not having them anyhow," says Karl, who knows about such things. The competition begins. We have entered Karl and Albert for the Boston, Vili and me for the one step. But we have not very high hopes of Vili. He can win only if the judges have a sense of humor. In the Boston, Karl and Albert, with 3 other couples, reach the final round. Karl has the advantage. The high collar of his swagger uniform, his new patent leather shoes, the chains and rings of his sleigh horse make a picture of dazzling elegance that none could hope to rival. In style and deportment, he is matchless, but in rhythm and sympathy, Albert is at least as good. The judges are making notes solemnly, as though the elimination rounds for the last judgment were in progress at Waldmann's. Carl wins and takes the 10 gull's eggs. He knows the brand of schnapps too well, having sold it to the house himself. He very nobly presents us with the booty. He has better at home. Albert takes second prize. With an embarrassed glance in our direction, he carries off his 6 gull's eggs to the fair-headed girl. Villy whistles. With my little seamstress, I sail away on the one step, and also come to the final round. To my surprise, I see that Villy has just remained seated. He will not even try. I distinguish myself with a peculiar variant of the knee bend and backward chasse that I have not shown off before, and the little girl dances like thistledown. We carry off the second prize and share it between us. Full of pride, I go back to our table with the silver medal of the National Union for Dancing pinned on my chest. Philly, you old puttyhead, I say. Why didn't you have a cut at it anyway? You might even have got the bronze medal. Yes, that's right, says Carl, supporting me. Why didn't you now? Billy stands up, stretches himself, adjusts his swallow-tailed coat, looks down on us loftily, and answers only the one word, because. The chap with the chrysanthemum then calls for competitors in the foxtrot. Only a few couples enter. Billy strides out onto the floor. But he hasn't the faintest notion of it, snorts Carl. Fascinated, we hang over the backs of our chairs to see what he will do. The female lion tamer is coming out to meet him. With a sweeping gesture, he offers his arm. The orchestra begins. On the instant, Villy is transfigured. He has turned into a runaway camel with an attack of St. Vitus's dance. He leaps in the air, and he limps. He skips and he circles. He lashes out with his legs and tosses his lady to and fro. Then, with a sort of pig's gallop, he goes careering down the room, the lion tamer not before but beside him, so that she is giving an exhibition of the bent arm hang from his outstretched right arm, while he has full liberty on his other side to do his worst without having to worry lest he tread on her feet. Then he is an impersonation of a roundabout, till his coattails stand off at right angles. Next moment, he sets off with fancy skippings slantwise across the dance floor, bucking like a billy goat with pepper under its tail. He thunders and spins and rages, and finally winds up with a weird pirouette in which he whirls his lady high through the air. Not a soul in the hall doubts but that he is watching a hitherto unknown professional exponent of some super foxtrot. Villy had seen his chance and made the most of it. His victory is so convincing that after him there is a long pause and then the second prize. He holds up the bottle of schnapps to us in triumph. But he has sweated to such an extent that the dye in his cutaway has run badly. His shirt and waistcoat are quite black, while his swallowtail seems decidedly paler. The competition is over, but the dancing continues. We sit around the table and drink up Villy's win. Only Albert is missing. Wild horses would not drag him from his fair-headed girl. Villy gives me a prod. Say, you, there's Adela. Where? I ask quickly. He points with his thumb toward the throng on the dance floor, and sure enough, there she is, waltzing with a tall, dark fellow. Has she been here long? I ask. I should like to think she had witnessed our triumph. "Came about 5 minutes ago," answers Villy. "With the stork?" "With the stork." Adela, as she dances, carries her head tilted backward a little. One hand is on the dark fellow's shoulder. As I catch a glimpse of her face from the side, my breath catches, so like is she under the shaded lights of the ballroom to my memory of those evenings of before the war. But from the front, her face is fuller, and when she laughs, it sounds quite strange to me. I take a long pull from Villy's bottle. The little seamstress is just dancing by. She is slimmer and neater than Adela. I did not notice it in the fog the other night on the high street, but Adela has grown now to a woman, with full breasts and stalwart legs. I cannot recall if she was like that before. Probably I did not give it any attention then. "Grown to a proper tough little bit of horse flesh, what?" says Villy, as if he had read my thoughts. "Ah, you shut up," I retort sourly. The waltz is over. Adela is leaning against the door. I go over to her. She greets me and goes on talking and laughing with her dark-haired chap. I stand there and look at her. My heart is beating fast, as if I were about to make a great decision. "What are you looking at me like that for?" she asks. "Oh, nothing," I say. "What about a dance?" "Not this, the next one," she answers, and goes off with her partner to the dance floor. I wait for her, and we dance a Boston together. I do my utmost, and she smiles appreciatively. "You learned to dance at the front, of course." "Not there exactly," I answer. "But we won a prize just now." She looks up quickly.
"Oh, what a pity. We might have done that together. What was it?"
6 gulls' eggs and a medal," I reply, and the color mounts into my hair. The violins are playing so softly that the shuffle of many footsteps can be heard. "Anyway, we're dancing together now," I say. "Do you remember the evenings when we used to race along here, one after the other, from the gym club?" She nods.
"Yes, we were rather childish in those days. But just look over there, the girl with the red dress. Those loose blouses are the latest thing. Chic, don't you think?"
The violins relinquish the melody to the cello. Tremulous, like suppressed weeping, they quiver above the golden brown tones. "The first time I spoke to you, we both ran away," I say. "June it was, on the old wall of the town. I remember it as if it were yesterday." Adela is waving to someone. Now she turns to me again.
"Yes, weren't we silly? And can you really dance the tango? The dark boy over there is a gorgeous tango dancer."
I do not reply. The music is silent. "Would you care to come to our table for a bit?" I ask. She looks across.
"Who's the slim boy with the patent leather shoes?"
"Carl Brugger," I reply. She sits down with us. Villy offers her a glass and makes some joke or other. She laughs and looks across at Carl. Off and on, she shoots a glance at Carl's sleigh horse. That is the girl with the latest fashioned blouse. I observe her in astonishment. She is so changed. Has memory played me false here, too, then? Did it grow and grow, too, until it has outgrown the reality? This rather loud girl sitting here at the table and talking too much is a stranger to me. But concealed under that manner, must there not be perhaps someone that I do know better? Does the thing become so distorted, then, just because one gets older? Perhaps it is the years, I say to myself. It is more than 3 years now. She was 16 then and a child. Now she is 19 and grown up.
and suddenly I am conscious of the nameless sadness of time that runs and runs on and changes, and when a man returns, he shall find nothing again. Yes, it is a hard thing to part, but to come back again, that is sometimes far harder.
What are you thinking, making such a long face about, Ernst? Asks Willy. Got the gripes?
He is dull, isn't he? Says Adela, laughing. But then, he was always like that. Why don't you be a bit frisky, Ernst? The girls like that much better than sitting around like a sad pudding.
So, that is over, think I to myself. So that is over, too. Not because she thinks me dull. Not because she has altered. No, not for any of these things. But because I see now that it has all been in vain. I have been running about and about. I have knocked again at all the doors of my youth and desired to enter in there. I thought, surely it must admit me again, for I am still young and have wished so much to forget. But it fled always before me like a will-o'-the-wisp. It fell away without sound. It crumbled like tinder at my lightest touch. And I could not understand. Surely here at last something of it must remain? I attempted it again and again, and as a result made myself merely ridiculous and wretched. But now I know. I know now that a still, silent war has ravaged this country of my memories also. I know now it would be useless for me to look farther. Time lies between like a great gulf. I cannot get back. There is nothing for it. I must go forward, march onward, anywhere. It matters nothing, for I have no goal. I grip my schnapps glass tightly and look up. Yes, there is Adela still questioning Carl as to where one may best buy smuggled silk stockings. The dance goes on as before. The orchestra is still playing the same waltz from the House of the Three Maidens. And here I sit, too, just as before, on the same chair, and I breathe and am alive still. Was there no flash of lightning then that tore me away? Did no country suddenly founder and go down about me, leaving me only surviving? All else this moment perished and lost to me forever. Adela gets up and takes leave of Carl. At Meyer and Nichols, then, she says pleasantly. You're sure? They do deal on the quiet in all sorts of oddments. Then I'll go along there first thing in the morning. Goodbye, Ernst.
I'll come with you a little way, I answer. Outside, she shakes hands.
You mustn't come any farther. I'm being waited for here. I know it is foolish and sentimental, but I cannot help it. I take off my cap and bow low to her, as if to take a long farewell. Not from her, but from all the things that were before. She looks at me searchingly a moment.
You are really quite funny sometimes.
Humming, she runs down the path. The clouds have gone, and night is standing clear over the town. For a long time, I stand looking at it. Then I go back.